This is 98.1 FM, Raglan Community Radio, Irirangi o Whangaroa. Hello, kia ora, my name is Jason. I teach holistic health and healing, and welcome to Your Health, Your Choice, a show that guides you on your healing journey, helping you choose your own healing path. And today on that show, I have Emma Galloway. Emma, welcome.
Thank you.
You've been on the station before, and I came across you mainly because we had a soup night with, you know, one of our community gatherings, and I missed out on your soup, but that's how I found out about you, because everyone was raving about it. And you're into real food cooking. What sort of diet are you living at the moment? And I say living because a lot of people do it and come off it, but really it's a lifestyle, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. And I think I probably embody my diet in a very real way, because I grew up vegetarian here in Whangaroa. Back in the 80s, it was kind of quite odd to be eating vegetarian.
Did you get bullied or anything?
There was a lot of bullying and teasing going on for a lot of different reasons, but a lifestyle choice was probably one of them. Yep.
Did anyone take your lunch and then return it? No, I'm sure it was.
I don't remember that, but I do vividly remember hiding my sandwiches as I ate them, so I would only kind of unwrap enough of the sandwich to eat and then quickly wrap it up, because my mum's favourite sandwich was peanut butter and alfalfa sprouts on wholemeal bread, which actually, surprisingly, nice? It's actually kind of nice. But as a child in the 80s, where everyone else just had white bread with Vegemite or cheese, it definitely made you think twice about showing everyone that that's what you were eating.
So I
grew up vegetarian.
Were you ever tempted as a child to...
I ate, the only meat that I've eaten was sausages, which lots of people would say, that's not even really, necessarily meat. Because my granddad encouraged me / forced me to eat them once when we were staying with him, and I actually really liked them. Mm. So then for a little while, maybe a year, I think every time I went to friends' houses and birthday parties and stuff, I was probably that weirdo vegetarian in the corner shoving her face with sausages.
Having her fix.
Yeah, but that was quite short-lived. And yeah, so sausages is the only thing I've eaten, and maybe licked a few tops of mince pies when I was little off friends. You know, you peel the pastry off the top and then you lick
and then
the mince
put it
off.
Back?
I can't remember. I feel like maybe I was given the top to eat. So vegetarian, and since having children, I had to kind of change our diet to also be gluten-free and mostly dairy-free. Due to intolerances, various ones. Me and my daughter don't do so well with gluten and dairy, and my son for a long time wasn't so good with dairy, but he's kind of outgrown that.
You know that about yourself before the children?
I didn't, no. Mm. So I worked as a chef for many years. That's what I'm trained in, and within my vegetarian limitations, I ate everything. And didn't think that I had a problem with anything, but actually looking back now, I had various health issues growing up, and so I'm pretty sure I've had gut issues for most of my life. It just wasn't something that was discussed.
No,
until recent years.
You know, I thought it was normal, usual to have this distress. I mean, I did go to the doctor eventually when I was 10 because it got so bad, you know, going to the toilet, and I had a colonoscopy, so I got to see the inside of my guts. I don't remember what happened, what was the diagnosis, but I still went back to eating whatever I was.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they gave me a pill, but my lifestyle didn't change.
Yeah, I think the amount of knowledge that has now been uncovered and is shared widely, and even in the last 10 years, 5 years even, you know, it's now pretty common for a lot of people to have something that doesn't, you know, that their body doesn't really like.
Yeah, unfortunately there are some people that see it as a trend and just take it on.
That is, there's definitely
I'm gluten free now.
There's those people as well, which unfortunately do actually often make it quite hard for people who actually are reacting to certain foods, because a lot of people in the hospitality industry in particular might not take people so seriously because the person that they just served before said they're gluten-free, but I can handle half a piece of toast, you know, or something like that.
It's very confusing.
Yeah, it can be quite confusing. Yeah, definitely.
Is there any sort of certification in the food safety thing for, you know, hospitality where it comes to dealing with people allergies. Or customers with that? Is there anything there?
I'm not sure, actually. It's been 15, my daughter's 15, so nearly 16. So it's been that long since I've been out of the industry.
I mean, I would hope it's updated.
Yeah, I did a talk at WinTech in Hamilton.
Oh, great.
It was just before we went into that second lockdown last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're definitely sharing the knowledge more, you know, than when I trained to be a chef there. That's but cool. I'm not sure about certification or anything. It would be amazing to know that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not expecting them to do a full nutrition
course.
No,
but at least have a full description of what it actually involves and why people are maybe making that choice or being forced to.
And how to spot people that are probably just using it as a, you know.
Yeah, which is fine too, because I know there are a lot of people who just generally feel better if they cut out, say, gluten or dairy. Yeah. It's usually one of those two, you know, because it can lower inflammation and things like that. So,
I mean, I usually ask people when it comes to, like, if someone's dealing with symptoms, one of the first questions is, what do you eat the most often? What's the food that you're eating the most often? And that's usually, it's usually eggs, bread, or cheese. Those are like one of the top three, and wheat. And it's like, because your body can only handle so much of the same thing.
Yeah.
And if you keep assaulting it, it is kind of like an assault. If you keep, like, if you have cereals for breakfast and then like a sandwich for lunch and then pasta for dinner, that's just grain, and if you did that for a month, that's a lot of one substance for the body.
Yeah.
And life's all about variety, so you need to have a break and
definitely
do all these sorts of things. So it doesn't matter what really the food is. It's like, whatever you're eating the most of, take a break from it, maybe. Yeah. Try it out.
But and I've found too, and it's something my mum had always said to me when I was little, usually the thing that you love the most, almost addicted to, is probably the thing that you shouldn't eat.
Yes.
And I know that really sucks to say that. Yeah. But for me, it was vinegar growing up. So I just love anything vinegary.
Yeah.
Pickles. I used to even make apple cider vinegar and honey drinks, and that was like what I would, you know, like love drinking.
Yeah.
I actually don't do so well with vinegar and pickles. Mm. It's something I've had to only, I feel like I've only properly accepted it in the last year or so, because I have had so many gut issues and trying to get on top of it.
Yeah.
Unsuccessfully for the most part still. I ate, like, I did the full FODMAP diet,
and so you tried
low
things.
Histamines, and I've tried all, you know, you name it, I've probably tried it, and a lot of the time it's cutting out all the things that I love, so pickles, chocolate, tomatoes.
I don't say chocolate.
I know. It's really high in histamine, unfortunately, so people that are struggling to process histamine often find they have a flare-up with chocolate.
And fermented foods.
Fermented foods as
unfortunately.
Well.
So it can be quite confusing. I thought fermented foods were good for me, probiotics and all that stuff.
Well, they are good. If you have a strong gut and your gut is functioning
correctly,
then it's amazing
for you.
You
can pretty much eat anything,
But if your gut is struggling, actually adding fermented foods, and I mean, this is totally individual, but for me personally, adding fermented foods is not great right now. I hope at some stage in the future.
Can you do apple cider vinegar?
I do still a little bit, and rice vinegar I have a little bit, but often we'll tend to just use lemon juice instead because that's okay.
Yeah, that's all I do for salad dressing. Extra virgin olive oil, lemon juice, salt, pepper.
Yep.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the stuff in the shops, it's got wheat, it's got MSG, it's got sugar, it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's probably one of the main things that I could say about the way that I cook is I encourage people to cook from scratch, you know.
Yes.
So rather than buying stuff in packets, just try your best to make it yourself. You know, I mean, we're all human and there's definitely times, I mean, I have, you know, packets of stuff in my cup, you know, in my pantry right now, but as a general rule, I try to make most things from scratch so I know what's in it.
That's one of the reasons, so you know what's in it, but there's also like being intimate and getting to know your food.
Totally.
There's this thing in, I think it's South Korea, it's called hand taste, where, you know, someone who makes the food is putting their love and their good intention into the food. So that's another flavor enhancer. And also it's a sense of accomplishment when you make something. Or even if you fail, at least you've learned something. So there's, I mean, there's no losing when you make your own food. No. It may not taste, I mean, if you're not used to it, it may not taste good the first few times, but eventually you'll get there and you'll never wonder why. Like, I make some really good home cooked meals and I wonder, why do I ever go out, you know?
Yeah.
This tastes really good. But then we go out because, you know, energy, we're a bit tired, or maybe we just want something different, which is fine.
Yeah.
But you can make some really good stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, like I said, we're all human. So to be so hard on yourself that you'd never eat out or you'd never eat from a packet is probably unrealistic for most people. But, you know, most of the time, if you can be making your food yourself, then you're going to feel so much better. It's actually a damn sight cheaper in a lot of ways.
Hell yeah.
And the it depends on the, you know, ingredients that you're using and stuff, but and always going to be better for the environment because the amount of packaging and stuff and rubbish created from packaged foods, if you can, is next level.
Buy in bulk, eh?
Yep.
Like, do you have any tips for how to buy on a budget? Like,
yeah, so definitely buying in bulk is massive. There's a bunch of co-ops in Raglan that order directly from Ceres Organics.
Great.
Probably I have a Chantel Organics account too, which I'm pretty sure anyone can just get.
Yeah.
And so then you can buy in bulk. Places like Binnen in Hamilton, there's a couple of them. They're amazing. You know, you can just take in your own bags or containers or whatever and just get as little or as much as you want. It will always be way cheaper than
going for the individual
pre-packed,
perfect serving size, here you go. But you're paying for that convenience,
paying
for that time saving.
Yeah, definitely.
Just going back to that, how the food you eat the most is the one you need to give up.
Mm.
The reason for that is, you know, there comes a point where whatever you're taking in, it could be toothpaste, it could be your conditioner, it could be just your environment. There's going to be a point where your body switches over to a stress response to that thing that you're exposed to. So there's going to be one day where the egg you're eating that was nourishing you is now causing a little micro stress response.
Mm-hmm.
But that micro stress response comes with a bit of adrenaline, comes with a bit of, you know, there's these hormones that make it feel a little bit good. So you eat it. Oh, this must be good to me. I'm feeling good. So it felt good in a good way. Now it's feeling good in a bad way, in a pretty, you know, and underneath it seems like it's doing good, but really, I mean, on the surface it feels good, but underneath it's doing some damage to you. So that's why it's good to get off those foods, because it's actually a micro stressor. That's the reason why you're feeling good.
Yeah.
So when you get off that, then the inflammation that's causing will eventually reduce.
Yeah. I mean, I noticed that big
before
time
it gets to
with my daughter. Now that she's nearly 16, she decides for herself whether or not she eats a little bit of gluten here and there. And if she eats it once a week, she's totally fine. If she has it twice in one day, not so great, you know. So it's that, the amounts, like you were saying, you know, it's almost like it builds up in your system.
I mean, I can imagine your daughter, not like if she had a family and was in a circumstance where no one knew about gluten-free, where would she be? And it's, you know, she'd probably have teared guts and who knows, surgery.
I mean, when she was little, her symptoms were quite severe. And mine were actually around that same time too. If I ever had any, even a tiny bit of gluten, I'd have like a 3-day headache that would just knock me big time, and you know, no amount of anything would get rid of it, so 3 days guaranteed I was out. My daughter was quite similar, but it affected her more in her gut, so her gut hurt so much that she had to like take days off school. And it's, we've come a long way and we've done a lot of work, and you know, I'm still not in the greatest place with my health, but
it's always a work in progress.
But my daughter has she's definitely come a long way compared to how she was when she was little.
So she must know a bit about food and everything and how her body, like, she's got a lot of self-awareness. Like,
she has.
A lot of us adults who don't even know half of probably what she knows.
Definitely. I mean, we were learning alongside each other, so she has the same amount of awareness that I now have, you know. Because she just had to be aware of what was happening, and she's super aware. So with dairy, you know, she will allow herself a little bit here and there, but she knows when she's had too much, and then she doesn't have any for a while.
How did you create this sort of more awareness around what you guys were eating? Was it journaling? Was it just sort of taking note of what was happening? Or was it just a body-mind connection thing, being mindful?
Yeah, I never really took notes. Mm. I took mental notes, a lot of them. So I didn't do it with my daughter, but I've done it with myself numerous times, like an elimination diet. So you take out all the main kind of stresses in for 3 weeks or whatever, and then introduce one back at a time and just observe. And it is amazing the awareness that you have in your body after removing something that amount of time.
It's like being in a very stinky room or a very noisy place. You get used to it.
Yeah,
the smell goes away, and the noise just becomes normal. And then you go out of that place, and it's like, and then you come back into it. It's like, whoa, this is... So that's what an elimination propagation diet's all about.
Totally, yeah. I mean, it's so amazing. We didn't eat any dairy strictly for about 2 years. Mm. And I still remember when I reintroduced butter back into our diet and we were okay with it. After I ate even the tiniest amount of butter, I could smell it on my face for like the rest of the day. It's like, even if I washed my face, I was like, I can smell butter. Now that I eat it daily, I don't even notice it.
It was so pungent.
Yeah. And sugar's the same. You know, if you take out or eliminate most sugar, man, do you buzz when you have a little bit more sugar.
I definitely feel it. Maybe that's why I'm so, like, you know, sometimes I'll have some raw diced garlic just as preventative medicine. And to me, there's a smell. But then when someone else sort of, like, I don't brush my teeth or anything, someone else comes like, oh, that's strong, you know, because they're not used to having garlic.
Yeah.
So that's the exact same thing. Whatever you're exposed to more often, you won't actually notice. So
no,
in order to be mindful of
it,
you've got to remove it and then let it come. Do you know, remember what foods you removed on elimination?
So gluten, dairy. Gluten and dairy were the main ones to begin with. This FODMAP diet that I've done recently.
There's fiber, right? It's based on the amount of
onions. It's
based on the fermentable fiber.
Yeah. So onions, garlic, and it's funny because when I occasionally have onion now, I can smell it on myself. I can feel it quite instantly. I still avoid most garlic. Garlic oil's fine, which is weird. There's an amazing app that I actually have from Monash University in Australia.
Those guys are great.
They're amazing. And so you can actually look that up and it will tell you, like, say, you shouldn't really have asparagus because that's really high FODMAP, but you could have like one spear.
Yeah.
You know, if you just really just want to have that taste, you know, or
it's like
a third of a courgette or...
Yeah, and you can have a small bit of broccoli. Like, there's low FODMAP and then high FODMAP.
Yeah. And some things it's more just the amount, like what we were speaking on before. It's just the amount, you know, that your body
that
can tolerate before it gets to the stress point.
And so
garlic oil's fine, which is great because I guess it doesn't have the actual garlic in it. It's just taken on the flavor. And so
did you ever get rid of legumes?
Yep.
Eggs?
I haven't. Maybe I feel like I'm just hanging on to eggs. because
that's one of the popular ones to remove.
But because...
mainly because of the egg white.
Right. Mm. Right.
Not the egg yolk. So I dabble in a bit of raw egg yolks, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't deleted the eggs from a diet at any point because being vegetarian, cutting out legumes, cutting out soy.
That is rough.
Yeah. Like, there's kind of no protein left.
Yeah.
So I was like, nope, I'm just going to tell my body eggs are fine. And I generally eat a couple of eggs a day to make sure that I'm getting some protein.
Okay.
But... yeah, I'm kind of, I don't know what you'd call what I eat right now. It's still pretty limited and restricted, but it's definitely not FODMAP anymore.
What about grains, like starches, refined sugar?
Yeah, I don't do a whole lot of sugar. And the sugar that I do eat is in like home baking that I've made myself. And I use less refined sugars or maple syrup. And
are you doing grains at the moment, like any type of quinoa? Or
quinoa I'm not so good with, unfortunately. Yeah. Which is interesting, speaking on what we were, you know, talking about before. Quinoa I lived off.
Oh.
Like lived off when my daughter was first born and she was reacting to everything that I ate through my breast milk.
Yeah.
I pretty much lived off quinoa and roasted veggies for like a year. Like, that's all I ate.
Yeah.
And so I never thought that it had been an issue for me. And maybe it hadn't before, you know, because you do change. But, yeah, in this last year, I hadn't had quinoa for about 8 months. And I had it just only, and I'm talking like 2 or 3 tablespoons of it in a dish that I had, was doing for work. And within half an hour, I had full body hives. And the quinoa is the only thing in the dish that I could think would have potentially caused it, because everything else I had still been eating. So I haven't eaten it since, because that was pretty extreme.
That is extreme. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, any sort of thing on the skin with hives is, it's your body trying to get rid of some toxin or, or something it's not liking. So it's interesting. There's something in quinoa that your body's
reacting to. And, you know, I'm hopeful that at some point my diet will be slightly more normal than it is now.
Are you doing like starches? Is there any sort of carbohydrate limit, or is it just purely the type of food?
Rice seems fine for me.
Do you do brown or white?
We mostly have white jasmine rice. My husband's Vietnamese, so we are a big rice eater in in our house. And I grew up eating brown rice. Like, I think I was a teenager before I ever ate white rice.
Right.
And I remember my mum like going, "I don't even know how to cook white rice." Because we'd always had brown. But
is there a difference in cooking them?
Yeah.
Do you have to do more soaking for the brown, or how does that?
No, you don't have to soak it, but it's more water and it cooks for way longer. So probably white rice is more like 12 to 15 minutes cooking.
Yeah.
Brown rice is more like half an hour or maybe even more, 40 minutes up to. Yeah, so no, it's quite different.
I'm always leaning on the side of white rice is better, purely because it's just glucose and nothing else. It's just one nutrient. Whereas brown rice, in the laboratory, you can burn this brown rice and measure all these, nutrients and minerals. But then that's not actually for you. That's for the grain. It's a baby, and that's its food. So it just passes through you, trying to hold on to it, you know, giving you little micro tears and stresses in the body. So it can be a micro stressor for a lot of people. So that's why I'm more fan of that.
Yeah, because it's funny, growing up, my parents were total hippies, and most hippies just think whole grain everything is good.
Yes, even whole grain bread,
whole grain everything is the better alternative. Yep. And so we only had brown rice. And it was funny, it wasn't till I was probably in my 20s and when I met my husband that I stopped and I thought, like, what do people in India eat? What do people all throughout Asia eat?
Yeah.
White rice. Yeah. It is so much easier for your body to digest.
Yes, yeah.
Like, I remember my brother was traveling through, maybe it was Malaysia or Thailand, and he was trying to find some brown rice because at that stage, that's all he still ate.
Yeah.
And they were like, "What? Like, that's bird food. Like, we don't eat that." Yeah, and those are the, you know, Ayurvedic and Chinese medicine is, I put my trust in that more than anything else. And so, if that's what people are eating in those countries, I tend to lean more towards that.
Yeah, every tradition in cuisine around the world is to make things easier to digest.
Yeah.
Everything's there for a reason. It's like the French when they do cream and spinach. There's something in spinach. It's a low level. Like kale has it a lot worse. It's a compound called oxalic acid.
Mm.
And that can bind to the calcium in your body. But when you put cream with that spinach or kale, then it binds to the cream, the calcium in the cream. Then you can have that. Not only does it taste way better with cream, but it's no longer sucking stuff
there's
from
a
your
reason
body.
For
so there's
it.
All these reasons. Yeah, spices and hot countries are there to sort of help any sort of bacteria and stuff growing. And there's always a reason.
Yeah.
People forget that. There's a reason why people eat white rice versus brown rice in traditional cultures.
And I mean, that's the same for so many foods, it's just we've lost that connection to food, where it comes from, why we do what we do with food. You know, our generation is there's probably not many people in our generation that grew up knowing why different foods were paired with other foods, you know, why you eat yogurt with fruit to lessen the sugar spike, I feel very grateful that I grew up with a mum that really had her finger on the, you know, on the pulse of nutrition and traditional nutrition, you know, not what they were preaching in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
All this low fat everything, margarine. You know. Yeah. I mean, margarine is almost classed as a swear word in our household.
Oh.
Like, it was, my mother would not have ever allowed that in our house.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And microwaves the same. True. which I now know, looking back, was, like I said, very uncommon for that era. So yeah, super grateful for her knowledge around food and herbs and health in general.
Yeah, where did she learn that from?
She taught herself a lot of it. Yeah, so I've spoken to her a lot about it, and she reckons she used to just sit up at nighttime when we were little, and she would just study the something medica, the homeopathy, like Bibles.
Great.
They are these big fat books that most people would look at them and not even really understand what was in them, because it's like in another language almost.
Thick, yeah.
And she would sit up and she would study them. And same with herbal medicine books. She did actually go on to do her first 2 years of training to be a homeopath, but she didn't do the last one because it meant having to move out of Raglan, which was just too hard when she had 4 young children and a massive property and everything. So yeah, she did that, and she did her herbal medicine training in Hamilton as well. Yeah, but a lot of it was self-taught, and just she has this really innate trust and kind of trust in her gut instincts, I'd say. Yeah.
So she has good intuition.
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that went, you know, we barely went to the doctors when we were little. She would always, and it's funny thinking about it now, for people that aren't familiar with homeopathy, it seems strange to me, because that was what we used. You know, if we were ill, that was, our mum would sit next to her, you know, the bed, and she would go through all this list. And if you're unfamiliar with homeopathy, or people listening, the questions that homeopaths ask you seem quite strange.
Right.
You know, like, is the pain in your throat a stabbing pain, a scratching pain, a, you know, like really distinct differences mean, and the symptoms mean a different remedy is required. Right. And so, yeah, mum would sit next to our bed and she would go through all this big list of questions, and then we would be treated with homeopathy most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quite amazing.
It's a good practice that, I mean, there is science to back it up, but it's just like whatever's in the mainstream is what people hear, and then the mainstream's always looking down upon chiropractor and homeopathy just because it goes against big pharma, which is, you know, it's all about
totally
money and profits for them. Just going back to what we're talking about, the brown rice versus white rice, it's like corn, sweet corn. Like, there wasn't really sweet corn back in the day, right? They've sort of created that through hybridization. And traditionally, corn was fermented, you know, it was soaked, fermented, and they used some sort of, I think it was a lime. It's called nixtamalization.
Mm.
Nixtamalization. Yeah, that's where they soak it with
lime.
And it's just, again, why do you do all this? To make it more easy to digest. We shouldn't be eating it straight off the cob.
Yeah.
That's so bad for you. I mean, there's a reason why you can see it in the toilet bowl.
The end product.
Yeah. It's like, you shouldn't be eating things that aren't digestible.
Yeah.
Because on their travel through the gut, they're causing a bit of stress and inflammation that you just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite interesting actually. Corn used to be more like maize, you know, like what maize is now, and that you didn't really eat it like on the cob.
No, you couldn't really.
It was, well, in Vietnam they do, it's quite funny.
Oh, really?
We went on a train trip and didn't realize that it was like a overnight, maybe 18-hour trip. We were told it was more like an 8-hour trip, so we didn't plan for food or anything. And luckily at one stop there was someone selling corn, and we got real excited. We're like, oh yeah, let's eat some corn. And it's like really starchy white kernels.
Yeah,
it was still edible because they put obviously heaps of salt in the water when they cook it.
Yeah,
but not one trace of sweetness at all.
Right
like that's what I guess you would, you know, you would make into tortillas or you know, something else other than just eating it in corn, you know, corn cob. But yeah, super interesting.
Mm.
Yeah.
And also the same with the legumes. I mean, most people know about that, not to eat beans without preparing them.
Yeah.
But anything, any sort of plant, infant, baby, seed thing, so nuts, seeds, grains, legumes, you need to prepare properably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that knowledge really is only kind of really gone mainstream in the last probably 10 years or so, eh?
I'm probably going more mainstream of fit celebrities did it, you know. Oh, look what I did. I soaked my almonds overnight in salt water.
Well, I do remember when Pete Evans first... Do you remember that? We were living in Australia at the time, I think, and there was a massive, like... Where was it that I saw? I feel like it was in a newspaper that he was advertising something, and it basically said, like, what is... you know, what his breakfast was, or maybe it was a full day of what he ate.
You're sharing that.
And he was the first kind of celebrity person to say that he ate activated almonds.
Mm.
And oh my God, did he get picked apart and pulled apart for that? Because back then, this is probably, maybe 11, 12 years ago or something that.
It's a while ago.
You were pretty weird if you activated your almonds, you know? Well, and then, you know, in the mainstream view of the world. And he was the first big name to come out saying that. And I remember he just got, he was called like the activated almond guy for years and ridiculed. Whereas now, you know, most people have at least heard, even if they don't do it themselves, I've heard about activating nuts and seeds before you eat them.
That's so much better. And if you can dry them or dehydrate them, they come out nice and crispy.
Yeah.
And you'll notice the difference when you eat them.
Yeah.
They're quite expensive in the shop, but you can do it yourself. It's not hard at all. Yeah. It's just time.
It always comes back to that time and motivation to just to do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a few minutes of getting it all set up and putting it in a bowl or something, leaving it out, and then you got to, you know, put it in another tray and dry it off. So yeah, but it's like, do you want health or do you want convenience?
And even if you don't have a dehydrator or some way of drying it, they're actually quite nice to eat just soaked. Yeah. I really like soaked almonds in particular. And just keep them in the fridge and they'll last maybe 2 or 3 days before they start to go yuck.
Do you use sea salt or do you just use water? How do you?
I just use water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Strain it off afterwards.
Mm. So if we go back into what you talking before about your garden growing up, you have a garden now.
We do, yeah.
How much work is that compared to working in the kitchen? Would you say one's more difficult or?
Gardening takes up more time.
More time.
Definitely. But on the flip side, I find it probably almost more rewarding because for me, and especially in these insane times we're in, having your hands in the soil is so good for your mental health.
Oh yeah.
Like it is, that's my happy place. Like that, if I'm having a stressed out day, I go out to, I'm like, kids, I'm going out to my office.
Yeah.
And I go out and I garden. And so definitely more time involved in gardening, but man,
it's a labor of love.
it's such a labor of love, and they go together, you know. There is nothing more rewarding than eating a dish that's had, like, say, a homegrown tomato in it that you've grown from a seed.
Mm.
You know, tomatoes in particular are a love of mine to grow, even though they don't really agree with me to eat.
Is that because of the nightshades? Or?
My mum reckons it's nightshades, but I'm leaning more towards the histamines, which I'm hoping to be able to sort out.
Are you properly preparing them, though?
In what way?
No seeds and no skins.
Oh,
Traditionally, that's how
don't we know about the seeds, but the skins I remove.
The sauce,
de-seeded and de-skinned. Well, it is interesting when I, because we grow probably like 100 tomato plants every year, and I preserve them all. And when I eat some of my homemade tomato sauce, which has no seeds and no skin, I'm okay.
Okay, so it's not a nightshade thing. It's definitely something there in the seed, maybe.
Hmm. Cool. Never thought about that. Thank you for
that's
that.
Just something else I to learned, think about. Yeah, totally.
But yeah, I have a real passion for growing tomatoes and from seed, because then you can grow all these amazing, you know, heirloom ones that you wouldn't normally be able to get from.
That's what we're missing, eh?
From the store.
A lot of foods have been hybridized for starch, for sugar, for size.
Yeah.
But when you do that, you do miss out on new nutrition, minerals, like, and that comes from the soil.
Yeah, and flavor.
Oh, yeah, flavor,
like, you know, like, so you compare an heirloom tomato, the flavor, to a store-bought tomato, which, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why the store-bought tomatoes are never going to taste like that beautiful homegrown heirloom one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just so much flavor and so much difference in flavor from one variety to the next.
Mm.
And something that I really noticed this year, because I grew this beautiful, it was like a Roma tomato, but it's not, I can't even remember the name of it. I feel like it's a Greek one that's from Greece, got the seeds, and they were so disgusting to eat raw.
Ooh.
It's like, okay, I'm probably not going to grow these again. But then what I realized is every tomato has its own purpose. You know, there's the sauce tomatoes, there's the ones that are good for eating raw, there's the ones that are good for drying. And so I dehydrated these ones and they were amazing.
Wow.
So, yeah, you're never going to be able to, if you're not growing them from seed yourself, you're not going to be able to come across those varieties.
Yeah.
So, yeah, growing tomatoes from seed, watching them at every stage and nurturing them like they're a baby, and then cooking something delicious.
Mm.
Like, honestly, I feel like I'm a millionaire when I...
And they're full of umami flavor, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, they're so good.
I love them. That's, I'm going to get to a point where I'm going to be able to eat them. I'm determined. Well, I mean, like I said, I can handle little bits, but definitely not the amount that I'd like to be eating when we're surrounded by boxes and boxes of ripe tomatoes.
Yeah, it's a good practice in restraint. And
Well, yeah, hives will do that to you.
Well, there you go.
There's nothing more annoying than bloody itchy skin.
Yeah. Just going on about flavor, like a lot of people go, oh, what do you mean flavor? This tomato is really nice. It tastes really nice. Well, what you're tasting is sugar. Like people, especially in America, I got this when I was over there. I had a yellow passion fruit and a purple one. I love the purple one, but the passion fruit just tasted like sugar. And yet that's the ones that the Americans really loved.
Yeah.
And then I've had European cheesecakes and I've had American cheesecakes. What's the difference? Sugar. One tastes sweet. Like just, there's no other flavor but sweetness. And the other one has actual flavor, like the berry or the almond or whatever. And there's not much, it's a mild sweetness. And you can tell a difference. But I don't know if many people today can tell the difference between different flavors. Like this is sweet, this is not sweet, this is just sugar. Oh, this is nice. Well, no, that's just sugar. It's not nice at all. It's only got one flavor. It's actually quite yuck.
Mm.
But people think that's quite nice.
So
you have to train yourself. It's not easy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like we were talking about the elimination diet, like that's the perfect way to actually really hone in on individual flavors as well as what it's, you know, creating within your body. Yeah. When you become more aware of it, it's quite amazing, really.
Yeah, I think that's one of the concepts of mono dieting or mono eating. It's just getting used to some simple flavors. Instead of having 1,000 things in the dish, it's like 1, 2, 3, or 4.
Yeah.
Sort of, and it takes 2 weeks for your taste buds to change over completely. So if you can hold out for 2 weeks, you know, like getting rid of sugar, for example, and then you have an apple, all of a sudden that apple is now so much sweeter.
Totally.
And you did that just by not having so much sugar. So you can change the profile of how foods taste by changing your lifestyle.
Mm.
Yeah. You don't always have to go and buy the greatest and latest. You can sort of change how you live and then your body will adapt, and eventually the most cheapest thing can be the most flavorful thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing more amazing than a perfectly ripe piece of fruit.
Yeah,
picked off the tree.
Yeah,
you know, when it's supposed to be picked off the tree.
Yeah,
you know, peaches. It's jumping to mind. You know, there's nothing nicer than a juicy ripe peach picked off the tree, and it's still warm from the sun, and you're eating it right there and there. Compared to what you would buy in the store, that's potentially been picked, you know,
dry and
they're picked
like
way too early.
Yeah,
so that they can be transported.
The ones off the tree, you know, you bite into it, it's like a bloody water balloon. It just explodes and it's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have any stone fruit in your garden?
We do. We've got a couple of different peaches and a couple of different plums. They're all quite small, so we only planted them maybe three and a half years ago. Yeah. So this year was the first year we had heaps of Louisa plums, which was amazing. Mm. Those things are insane. Like I now know that you're supposed to like pick off some of the small plums, because otherwise they will just grow so many plums that the branches will actually break. They're kind of insane. They're just so prolific.
Do you have to do that with other plum trees, or is it just that
other plum trees don't seem to have so many?
It's
insane how many plums are growing on each individual branch. It's kind of bonkers.
Okay. get out there.
And actually my dad told me that if you do pick off some of the plums, each Louisa plum that does continue to grow to full size is like twice the size. They're huge. You can grow them like the size of a mango, almost, those Louisa ones. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. He said he's got a friend in Raglan that does that. And they're like the size of a small mango, but the size of a mango. Whereas our Louisa plums were all quite small because we had so many on the tree.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Do you do any citrus?
Yeah, we actually were really lucky. This house that we bought about nearly 5 years ago, I think, we bought this house. And it already had established lemon tree, lime tree, grapefruit, orange and mandarin.
Great. So combo.
Pretty lucky. Yeah. So we have actually the only ones that we planted where we got a lemon, planted another lime and a blood orange. So they're all small. They haven't really produced yet. But
do you guys have any issues with citrus? Because that's one of the things you can eliminate in the diet is citrus, which sounds a bit crazy because it's meant to be good for you. But a lot of people, it can cause problems.
I seem okay with it so long as I don't overdo it.
Yeah.
Lemons and limes, I'm all good with. I definitely have to be a bit careful with grapefruit and oranges, not so much of, but no fruit goes to waste in our house because my husband in particular is a fruit bat. Like, he could quite happily sit down and just feast on a massive bowl of fruit every day.
Yeah. It is nature's candy, so.
Yeah. That's and cool. What else have we got? Figs. We've got a couple of fig trees there. Unfortunately, they're not the nicest figs. Right. I have tasted much nicer figs, but...
And there's different varieties, right?
Yeah. Heaps of different varieties. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Unfortunately, this isn't the real nice variety, but it is what it is. But it's amazing. And when you have your own tree, you can see why they're not something that you find in stores. Because honestly, they are amazing for about a week and then they are all split and the birds and the bees are, finding their way into them. So, yeah, they're not something that can be really picked and sold that easily. Yeah. I know, there are definitely places that do it. But
they're nice though, eh?
It's funny though, figs, actually, speaking about sugar, they're such an old fruit that they don't have the sweetness of the new varieties of different fruits.
That makes sense. Because they're very flavorful. Like, I don't get that sweet hit with them.
No, I mean, there's a couple of days out of our season where they are so sweet it tastes like it's got honey in it.
Oh, wow.
But that's like one day or 2 days. And if it's been raining, no, they're not super sweet. You notice the change when it rains.
Yeah.
But yeah, they definitely don't have the same level of sweetness as other fruit.
Yeah. And do you have any root vegetables?
Yep. I have to admit I'm not the greatest at growing root vegetables.
Okay.
My mum and dad are. My dad is amazing at growing beetroots and my mum is like the carrot queen.
That's a cool name, carrot queen.
Carrot queen. I'm still trying with my root vegetables. Actually right now, yesterday and today are the best times to be planting root vegetables if you follow the moon cycle.
Yep. Yes.
And so I got some more beetroot and carrot in today. And about a month ago I planted some beetroot, carrot and parsnip. So I'm gonna try. Yeah.
Okay.
Potatoes were okay at growing. We grew heaps of them this year.
Yeah.
And kumara, I haven't had huge luck with kumara, but I'm gonna keep trying as well.
Yeah.
I got them way too late.
One particular type or just the timing, was it?
Yeah, well, in previous, the last time I tried to grow them, I feel like we put too many nutrients in the soil, and I've since learned that actually kumara grows really good in quite nutrient poor soil. They don't really like heaps of, compost and sheep poo and stuff like that. And I feel like we put too much in because root vegetables, and I feel like this is where I go wrong, is you don't want too many nutrients, especially nitrogen, because otherwise you'll get heaps of leafy green tops and nothing under the root, the roots don't really form.
They don't,
So that's what happened with us with our kumara the first time we tried to grow them. Heaps of amazing leaves. And they just went everywhere. And I've now since learnt you're supposed to like not let them sucker down onto the soil. And you kind of keep it a bit contained.
That's how you garden. That's how you cook. You learn through experiment.
Totally.
You can read and do all this stuff. But you got a different soil, a different climate, a different way of, So it's good that you know that now.
Never ending learning for sure. Yeah. This year I think we got them in way too late. I wasn't planning on growing any, but my mum had some of the tipu, the shoots that you plant. And so I planted them, but they were probably about a month and a half too late.
Yeah.
So we'll see if we get anything out of them before the first frost hits.
So what do you think's the easiest thing for someone who hasn't really gardened before to start trying to grow? What's like herbs maybe?
Herbs definitely. definitely, because you can even grow them in pots. You know, you don't even need a garden space. You can have them on your deck or your, you know, front door. Pots and herbs is amazing too, because generally a recipe doesn't call for a huge big bag of herbs, you know, like you would buy from the supermarket. So often, you know, say if you wanted some coriander for a recipe, they come in massive bags at the supermarket and you might only use a tiny little bit and then the rest just goes manky in your fridge and then you waste it. So herbs is an amazing thing, I think, for people to start with, because you just pick and use what you need and the rest just keeps growing until you need it the next time.
Cool.
Yeah. Greens is another good one. Silver beet is should, and for a long time was in every backyard in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So easy to grow. Nothing really eats it. Slugs and snails a little bit, but once they're established, not really.
Yeah.
The white butterflies don't really tend to go for them like they would the brassicas, broccoli and stuff. So
that's probably why they're popular. They're easy, eh?
They're really easy and you can just kind of plonk them in and water them every now and then. They just kind of do their thing.
Yeah.
And they will, you know, they will supply you with greens for the whole winter.
Silver beet.
Yeah, silver beet. Or actually my favorite is actually, it's called perpetual spinach, but it's more, it looks like a soft silver beet. Like the leaves are a bit softer.
Okay.
And it's kind of like a bright green, really just lush leaves. But yeah, it looks like a silver beet, but it's called a spinach.
What does it taste? Is it?
It tastes like silver beet.
Silver beet. Okay.
Yeah, like a mild silver beet. I don't know why it's called spinach, because to me it looks more like a silver beet. But
probably marketing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's some reason. It has a soft. It does have a softer leaf, more like a spinach. Yeah,
that's cool. I think we can just keep going and going, but we're going to end it there. So where can people find you? Where, do you want to share your website, your books? You got a few cookbooks?
Yeah. I've got three cookbooks. The latest one is probably the only one you'll be able to find anywhere other than direct from me, because the first two are now out of print. So that's called Every Day. I have a website called My Darling Lemon Time where I share recipes. There's probably like close to 400 recipes on there where I've been sharing for the last 11 years. And that soup recipe that you're speaking about is on there. Mm-hmm. Can't remember what it's called. I feel like it's like a spiced
kumara.
There you go. You've got it.
Red lentil soup.
There you go. That's on there. And also probably the place I'm most active on is Instagram. And it's just at My Darling Lemon Time as well.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Catch you later. Bye.
Bye.
And that was local chef extraordinaire Emma Galloway sharing wisdom, healing and medicine through her real food recipes. Look her up at My Darling Lemon Time, time as in the herb. And yeah, that's all from me. So until next time, stay free, be yourself, know that you are loved and that you are love. Kia kaha.